Hello, and welcome to another episode of the Underreported Podcast. I am Melanie, your reporter. And on this podcast, I share stories of crimes committed against Black women and Black girls because they are underreported in the media. The way this works is I share a story with you, the audience, and I share it with someone in the studio. And today I'm sharing it with Mr. Marcus Tanksley.
What's good?
Thank you so much for being here.
Thank you for having me.
The way this works, I'm going to share the story. You are free to interact, interject, ask questions. Mm. I won't always know the answers to those questions, but you are the voice of the audience, right? And so hopefully it'll help tell a fuller story. You'll be reacting the way they are while they're listening. And so we will share these stories. So let's get into it. So the story I'm going to tell you about today is filled with twists and turns that you will not see coming. It's quite shocking and senseless. It's a story of a woman who was killed by someone you would have never imagined. This is the underreported story of Latrice Curtis. It's around 8 a.m. on January 30th, 2008, and a man named Darren Curtis has just called 911 to report his wife missing. He tells Durham police that he last spoke to his 21-year-old wife, Latrice Curtis, the night before. It was around 10 p.m. She had called him. She's a student, and she had called him after her classes had finished at North Carolina Central University, where she was an administration and management major. So she was basically like studying accounting. And so her classes are over and she calls her husband and she's like, OK, I'm just finished, about to head home. But before I do, I'm going to grab something to eat and then I'll be on my way. He tells police that she was already in the car when she called and he waited up for a while, but then like drifted off to sleep. And when he woke up, it was the next morning, and he realized she wasn't home and called her and texted her. But after receiving no answer, he decided to call the police because I don't know where my wife is.
Yeah, right? It's already terrifying.
Police take the information and officially file a missing persons report on Latrice. But what Darren doesn't know is about 1 hour before he woke up and called the police, there was another man who also called the police. This man's name is David Jones, and he called the police to report seeing something on the side of the road. He reports he was driving down the I-540 freeway, and he sees what appears to be a Black female on the embankment, dead.
Wow.
David, though, isn't the only one who's called the police that morning to report seeing someone on the embankment. Other motorists have called in as well, and police are like, immediately, we need to go see what's going on.
I was like, how many people had to call for them to get out there?
They get their stuff and they head out. When police get to the scene, they confirm that it is indeed the body of a Black woman and she's been stabbed multiple times. By 9:30, so a little less than 2 hours after Darren initially called the police to report his wife missing, he has been called out to the scene on the highway. Wow. And has to identify the slain woman, and he does. And it is that of his 21-year-old wife, Latrice Curtis. So as news begins to spread about Latrice being dead, her family, of course, is also being notified, and they begin to pile in at the police station. Her dad, in particular, gets to the police station around 11. So things are moving pretty quickly, right?
Yeah.
So her dad gets to the police station around 11 and he tells police he had been trying to call Latrice. And when he sees on the news that a body was found, he's freaking out, hoping that, of course, it's not his daughter. Right. He starts calling Darren, but Darren never answers. So no answer from his daughter, no answer from her husband. Mm-hmm. So he's like really stressed. He eventually calls NCCU, the school that she attends, and asked if anybody had known anything, and they tell him that he should call the sheriff. And that is the way that he found out and eventually comes to the police station. He also tells police once he gets to the station and they're kind of doing their interviews of him. He tells police that Latrice and Darren hadn't been married that long. In fact, they only dated for a couple months. And then one day Latrice was just kind of like, we got married. So the introduction of him and their relationship, the family wasn't really a fan, right?
Yeah, like sounds like at least the dad wasn't, but definitely.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Right? Things are not really off to a good start. And the dad is a bit traditional. He's very overprotective of his daughter, but he's also traditional. Like, this man didn't even ask me for your hand in marriage. So, like, he's just kind of put off, right? So all of that, and now my daughter is dead, and you are not answering. Where were you? And the police are like, we've done some questioning of him as well, and he... it doesn't seem like he has an alibi, right? Mm-hmm. So dad is already like, this man did something to my baby.
Right.
The other thing that her father learns is that Darren said he just fell asleep, right? Remember I was saying he tells the police that...
it was like 9 o'clock or something.
Yeah, well, she calls at 10, and he waits up for a while and then falls asleep. And her dad is like, your wife isn't home yet and you just fall asleep?
Yeah,
that's usually, just not the way that, you know, he would expect her husband to have gone on that night.
Right, and you're just thinking about multiple stab wounds, like... two or three, okay, but like more than that, it's like, okay, that's passion.
Yep,
something's
exactly.
Up.
Something
this
is up.
Not just a random.
100%. Right. So police, to your point, understand that part and are hearing this side from Latrice's father. Mm-hmm. And her father's pretty outright, like convinced that Darren has did something and that police need to arrest him. And police, one of the things that you know, especially in true crime, I think that's said pretty often, is that when someone is killed, many times the first person police look at is their
partner, their spouse,
whoever is like closest to them. Mm-hmm. That's who they're going to begin investigating. So with armed with all of this information, of course, the police want to get Darren into the station and to question him themselves. So Darren, again, at the station, and his interview begins. He's pretty cooperative and compliant. They ask for his fingerprints and his DNA and some to take pictures of him, his hands, his face, his body. He's very compliant and allows all of those things to be done. He also goes into a bit more detail than he did on the 911 call. Mm-hmm. He tells police, yeah, she called me around 10 p.m. and yeah, I did fall asleep. I woke up between 6 and 7. I realized she wasn't home. I start calling her. I'm texting her. I'm trying to figure out where she is. After not getting any answers, I decide to call the police. So police take what they have from Latrice's father's interview and Darren's, and they begin their investigation, like trying to figure out what exactly happened. They head out to Darren and Latrice's apartment complex and interview some neighbors. And the neighbors are like, no, we've never heard anything odd come from them. We've never seen anything. Like, they just seem like a fine, regular couple.
Mm-hmm. Also, how old is he?
Ooh, good question. I don't know how old he is. She is 21 for sure, but I'm not 21. Sure how old he is.
Because they talked at 10, he falls asleep.
Mm-hmm.
His man slept for 8-9 hours.
Yeah, full night sleep.
Full night.
Mm-hmm.
And then woke up.
Yeah, you're right. So all seemed well after talking to the neighbors.
Mm-hmm.
So police are trying to figure out where to go next. Like, how do we investigate this? What's the next clue? Yeah. And then they get a tip from a state trooper. A state trooper tells the police investigating this case that a little after 1 a.m. earlier that morning, he saw two vehicles parked on the side of the highway. One was a minivan and one was a sedan. The minivan really caught his attention because it was parked, but the windows were cracked and the windshield wipers were going. And he just thought it was really weird that that would be happening. It's 1 o'clock in the morning. This other car seems fine, but like these things are happening with this. And he doesn't see anyone around.
Mm-hmm.
So the trooper, again,
like,
thinks
what they drive. Go ahead.
So the trooper, again, thinks it's pretty strange, but he doesn't have time to like stay and really look into it because he gets a call that he needs to go somewhere else.
Mm-hmm.
So he's heading back to his car, and before he leaves, he decides, I should write down the license plates of these vehicles, which he does. So later on in the day, when he's understanding that this body has been found and these car and one of the cars that he saw is there, it's Latrice's car, he decides to call in to tell them what he saw.
Mm.
So they look up the license plate and they learn that the sedan was actually Latrice's car. And the other vehicle, the van, was actually registered to a man named Robert Reeves.
Mm-hmm.
So police look into Robert Reeves, try to figure out what they can understand about him. But it's not a very clear connection to Latrice. They're like, I don't know how these two would be at the same place at the same time. Yeah, at 1 o'clock in the morning. So police phone Robert Reeves and ask him to come in. He agrees. So Robert comes in. His nickname is actually Bishop, which he tells them. He's actually a minister in the area, and that's just kind of like the nickname.
I'm like, how you get a longer nickname?
It's just
than
the nickname that he's kind of picked up.
Gotcha.
So they ask if they can take his fingerprints, if they can take his DNA and his pictures as well, just like they did with Latrice's husband. He agrees. After doing all of that, he tells police, they're asking him, where were you earlier this morning? Like, you know, and so he tells them he was actually at a church event and he's not sure why his car was out there. He eventually tells them that he has a roommate by the name of Stephen Randolph, and that Stephen, who is a student at NCCU, occasionally uses his car from time to time because he's been having some car issues.
Mm-hmm.
And then he mentions that Stephen, his roommate, has been having an affair with Latrice.
Oh, wow.
So police are like, ha, here's the connection, right?
Right.
Police are shocked to learn this new bit of information, and they want to get Stephen in for an interview ASAP. Robert is like, I can actually get him to come in. It's no problem. We're roommates. We're cool. I can do that.
No, they should. Why don't the police just go show up?
Well, like, they probably could have. Yeah.
Detectives. That's my question. It's like, usually police don't investigate. There's usually detectives. And it's like, let's go pay this person a visit.
A visit. Right. Well, in this case, about 2 days after Latrice's body is found, it's February 1st, and Robert stays true to his word, and he shows up with Stephen at the police station. Stephen goes into the room, agrees to have his DNA, his fingerprints, and his photographs taken like everybody else.
Who spilled the beans on the affair?
Robert.
Oh, so Robert just went on and put it out
like,
there.
Hey,
he was like,
Stephen is my roommate.
Yeah, I'm in here, y'all questioning me. He uses my car, and actually,
Robert's well, and like, they're asking him about your car, you know,
and
around.
Robert's like, look.
Yeah, let me tell you about my roommate who's been sleeping with this married woman.
Last thing I'm going to do.
Exactly. So, Stephen comes in. They're questioning him. He confirms, yeah, I am an athlete, and yeah, I've been having an affair with Latrice. I know she's married. She actually doesn't tell me too much about that part, but we started off as friends, and it kind of developed into a sexual relationship, and that's kind of, you know, the relationship that we had. He then tells police he was actually with Latrice the night she was killed. He says Robert wasn't at home and Latrice had come over that night and they had sex. But then the condom got stuck. So she leaves his house. She freaks out. They both are freaking out.
Mm-hmm.
She grabs her stuff and around 10 p.m., she leaves. She leaves, and that actually aligns with Latrice's husband's story, which is that she called him around 10 p.m. to say she was going to be on her way home. So after Latrice leaves, Stephen says that he calls up one of his other girlfriends because he's actually quite the ladies' man. Again, he's a basketball player. He's like, yeah, I got a couple girls. So after Latrice leaves, he calls up his other girlfriend and heads to her house. And when he gets there, there are some other friends there, and they just kind of like kick it for the rest of the night. And he's like, you can actually call them. They'll corroborate my story. That's where I was. After she left, I went to go see my friends. So police are like, okay, you know, you have an alibi.
Mm-hmm.
He says that Robert wasn't home. Robert's car wasn't home. I don't know where Robert was. That's just what I did that night, right? So before
He never even used his car that night.
According to him.
Okay.
Right. So before wrapping up the interview, Stephen also mentions to police that he and his girlfriend recently have been receiving some strange phone calls, and that about a month ago.
So he got a girlfriend?
Stephen? Yes, Stephen. Well, that's where he went after Latrice left.
I thought it was just another like jump off, but this is his.
Yeah.
Stephen busy.
He was quite busy. So he mentions that about a month ago, he and his girlfriend, or one of the girlfriends he has, their tires on their cars were slashed. Both of them had their tires slashed on top of receiving these very strange phone calls. And so he's like, I don't really know what has been happening, but like, this has been our experience. I'm not sure if it's tied to Latrice, but the reason actually that I had been using Robert's car is because the tires on my car were slashed, and that's why I had been using it. What's not known to the public until the trial later begins is that during that same interview, Stephen tells police that Bishop Robert Reeves isn't exactly who he portrays himself to be.
Mm-hmm.
He tells them that the two of them met at a car wash, and after learning that Stephen was looking for a place to stay, Robert offered up his basement. Stephen is like, I need a place. Mm-hmm. This works for me. So he takes him up on the offer and moves in. Shortly after moving in, Robert asks Stephen if he's ever considered being a part of an escort service. Stephen, kind of allowing his ego to get the best of him, starts to consider the idea. Maybe I could. Maybe I can make some money. And then Robert tells him to drop his pants so that Robert could evaluate him. Stephen, again, feeling himself apparently, obliges. He drops his pants. And then Robert comes over and then begins touching him. So Steven at this point is like, oh, hold up. That's not what I thought we was doing. So he tells him to stop immediately. That incident really changes everything for Steven. He begins to feel uncomfortable staying in that house. So uncomfortable that he actually hit up one of his cousins for his cousin's gun. He actually is like, I just for safety feel like I want to be able to protect myself. Shortly after that first escort incident, Robert offers Steven a discount on the rent if he agrees to engage in some sexual activities with him. Steven, again, is like, that's not really my jam.
And this is Bishop that you're
and
talking
this is
about.
The Bishop.
Okay. Mm-hmm.
So Steven is like, thank you, no thank you. I'm not homosexual. Like, I'm not interested. So Steven profusely declines and, again, starts spending less and less time at Robert's house because he's uncomfortable and doesn't really want to be there.
Right.
So again, that bit of information is discovered later, but that is what he told police in his interview. So on February 2nd, the day after Steven's interview and about 3 days after Latrice's body was found on the side of the road, Robert Reeves is arrested for the murder of Latrice Curtis. Robert Reeves being the Bishop. I know earlier I said she was found with multiple stab wounds. She was actually found. She had 40 stab wounds that she suffered.
Wow.
And police, to the point you made earlier, police say that many stab wounds lends itself to a very personal and jealous and crime of passion type of crime, right? So they allege, their version of the story, is that Robert killed Latrice because she was in his, quote, in his way of a, quote, relationship with Steven. They said that after Latrice left that night, after she left Steven, Robert followed her. And when she most likely pulled over, again, because she had this condom that was stuck in her. So they say that she probably pulled over to try and pull this condom out again because she didn't want to go home with this stuck in her. And when she did so, Robert, who was following her, pulled over as well, got out of the car, approached her, and then attacked her.
What makes... How Robert's got to be twisted in the mind.
So police also reveal during the trial that Robert the Bishop had a second secret phone line. That second phone line matches the strange phone calls that Steven said he and his girlfriend had been receiving. Same number, same everything. That's who had been calling them. They also discover that based on that phone's phone data, the location of where it was matches the location of where those tires were slashed for both Steven and his girlfriend. So Robert had long been harassing Steven and the women in Steven's life because he wanted this like relationship with him that he was never going to get.
Something that passionate, so distant from her.
Mm-hmm.
Like a dude that has that will never have a relationship with the dude that she's having an affair with.
Yes. Yep.
That's insane.
Insane. Robert Reeves has never confessed to the murder of Latrice Curtis, but on October 9, 2009, he was found guilty of first-degree murder for the murder of Latrice Curtis. He was sentenced to life without the possibility of parole. The other thing that came out that I just want to quickly say is that Robert Reeves was actually previously convicted of third-degree sex charges, in 1988, and simple assault and battery in 1982. He also apparently had a history of like coercing men. Mm-hmm. He would take his position as this minister and this, quote, bishop, and try to use that to develop relationships with men and boys, and then try to flip that into a sexual relationship. This is actually like a pattern that the prosecutors allege that he had. So this situation kind of went in line with that. But when Steven declined that and is very persistent in declining that, I guess he took it out on the women in his life.
That's crazy. And something that always sends me over the top about that is like, how many, like, he's this bishop, people trust him. How many like younger kids has he took advantage of?
Yep. I always wonder that. These are just the people that we know now.
Right. Oh, yeah.
How many just the people do we not know? Mm-hmm. You know, how many other people were victims of his? How many other people has he done something to that, has just never come out?
Y'all got to be careful.
Yeah. Yeah. So unfortunate.
Mm-hmm.
So rest in love and peace to Latrice Curtis, sending prayers of love and strength to any and everyone who loved her, to her family. And thank you, Marcus, for being here and letting me tell you the story of Latrice Curtis.
Her husband.
Her husband.
Is that for all this to come out?
Mm-hmm.
Dang. Yeah.
Until next time.